Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And today we're very pleased to have Mohammed Shama and Matthew Newton from Berkeley join us. Welcome both.
Glad to be here.
Hey, guys.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you on. I think you came onto our radar because we saw through Carson Gross that you're using HTMX at Berkeley, and then found out you're using Django in a number of ways there. So I'd love to talk about that, your backgrounds. Maybe we could just jump into how did each of you get into coding, and then we'll make our way to your current work. Either one of you.
Mohammed, why don't you begin?
All right. I'm product of the 80s Apple IIe generation, having it in grade school, having like one computer in the classroom. So I was always familiar with BASIC and obviously all the number of video games. That's really why I had the computer. But it wasn't until college that I started, I was around 1995 when I started picking up web programming and Perl, CGI, and doing side gigs for professors and student clubs. And I was just the guy who was like, yeah, we want to get on the Yahoo web directory. Can you do that? And I was like, sure. It's called email David or whoever at Yahoo. There was a guy, you emailed him and he put you on the directory. And they loved it because Yahoo was always like the homepage when the browser kicked in, Mosaic, and they loved it when they would click through to see their student org. So I did that. I was a humanities major, and I basically decided to head out west from there. I was at University of Texas and then got accepted in the grad school at Cal, UC Berkeley, and was the inaugural class of this, basically what's today the School of Information. And that was 99 when I graduated. And decided not to take a chance on the impending .com bust. And so I played it safe with, working at a bank as a programmer for a while and then working as an IT auditor for a big five or big six firm at the time. And then decided to come back to Cal, where I just felt nice, happy, and warm, fuzzy feeling there. And I knew I'd have to start as a system administrator to get kind of anywhere in the system, but I did. And now I'm here, and I've programmed in several different languages since then, and I love it. Wouldn't trade it for the world.
And what is your current role? Sorry.
So I'm technically a senior web developer for marketing and communications in UDAR, which is University Development. Matthew, help me out here.
And alumni relations.
Alumni.
It's the people who ask you for money, hit you up for money. And I'm going to get it for that one. But
so you're a profit center, not a cost center at the university, though.
Exactly. We're a support organization of the university, but it is our job to ensure that essentially the representation of the university to donors and interested potential donors and alumni, as opposed to like public affairs, which would target potential students.
Okay, interesting.
More to discuss on that, but Matthew, we'd love to hear your backstory.
Mohammed's path and mine are similar in a lot of ways. I also got bit by the programming bug in the early 80s in elementary school. My school was lucky enough to get an entire lab of Apple IIe's networked together, very, very fancy, when I was in the third grade. And they sat us down in front of those things and first taught us BASIC and then taught us Logo. And I just remember falling in love with the idea that this was a machine that at one moment didn't know how to do a particular thing, but if I sat there and typed for a few minutes, I could teach it how to do something that it couldn't do just a few minutes before. That was when I just fell in love with computers. So fast forward years later, I did my undergrad at Berkeley, and I also was a humanities major. The idea originally was that I was going to go to law school, but working in a law firm for a couple of summers dissuaded me of that idea. So when I graduated, the web was taking off, and I, you know, had been a computer geek for a long time, and I had also been a writer and an editor. And so my first job out of college was basically in a content factory at CNET in San Francisco, which is still around, of course. And then after a bit, I landed a job at PC World Magazine, which at the time was the most widely read computer magazine on the planet, or at least that's what we told people. I wrote and edited there for a bit, but then when the dot-com bust happened, the magazine downsized, and they didn't have a job for me as a writer and editor anymore, but they asked me if I would project manage the in-house web development team. So starting in 2000, I did that, and while I was on that team, we ended up building a CMS from the ground up in Active Server Pages, which at the time, Microsoft's ASP gave you a choice. You could program your backend in VBScript or in JScript, which was Microsoft's own version of JavaScript. So we went with JScript. And so, like, I don't know, 10 years before Node was ever a thing, we wrote this entire CMS from the ground up in server-side JavaScript. We kind of didn't know how ahead of the times we were in that regard. But being on that team for a number of years made me realize that what I really wanted to do was code full time. And so when I moved on from that role, I became first a freelance coder and then worked for a couple of startups in the city. And then I guess it's around 10 years ago that I became the in-house web developer for the Alumni Association at Cal. And then a few years later, joined UDAR, and I've been on the team with Mohammed and the rest ever since.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, we're lucky to have Matthew.
This is Django Chat. So how's Django fit into the story? Like, how did that become is that the tech of choice? How did it become the tech of choice? Or how did you get to use it?
It is definitely the tech of choice in our department these days. I joined the department a little bit before Mohammed did. And at that time, we had probably about on the order of a dozen CMS-based sites that were all in Drupal. And then...
Not a dozen CMSs and a dozen sites.
And then we had a PHP legacy app at Cal, which is kind of a homegrown mini social network that is still in existence. And then our department's biggest deal is give.berkeley.edu, which is kind of the canonical way to give money to Berkeley. And when I joined the department, that was a legacy Cold Fusion app. And we knew that that had to be replaced with something someday. And then the person who was kind of the godfather of that app left the department. And we hired Mohammed to replace him and then immediately began the discussion. You know, what platform do we want to move forward on and what language do we want to be writing in? And, you know, we had all those big, meaty questions to answer. Mohammed, you want to take it from there?
I mean, I like sharing this story. It's a funny story. So that's around 2001, the alumni relate. I was working at the School of Business at the time, and I was programming in ASP.NET, Cold Fusion, and Perl, and PHP. And alumni relations asked the School of Business, can you have one of your programmers consult with us on how to make those dynamic web pages? That's what they said. And so they asked me to go down there and give them a talk. So I basically walked them through the, you know, how to do it in pretty much those four different, you know, languages. And I told them, you know what, I think Cold Fusion is going to be your best bet. Because you already know HTML, and what's a little bit extra on top of it? at least that was the marketing back then. And so lo and behold, I'm hired by UDAR, which was Alumni Relations. And what do they have? The Cold Fusion web application that I feel like I kind of, you know, encouraged them to write. But they want to get rid of it. And it wasn't the first time I was asked to get rid of Cold Fusion. And so I think that was kind of what piqued the ears of the interviewers, is like, oh, you know how to get rid of Cold Fusion? So I did not know that it lasted for so long.
But how did you go from, well, we're going to get rid of it, when there's these different options. Out of those, why Python and why Django?
I think the first question that we really tackled was, you know, do we want to be, Cold Fusion was obviously not a solution going forward. And so the question was, do we want to be writing in PHP or Python going forward? I think we maybe considered Java for half a second, but not very long at all. And I had, you know, been in the Drupal world for several years at that point, had written a lot of PHP, but was also very familiar with Python, and I definitely knew where my preferences were, because I tend to like code that looks as close to pseudocode as possible, and Python definitely gets you a lot closer to that ideal than PHP does. And so that was why I leaned in that direction. I wasn't the only one on the team that leaned in that direction. And so once we kind of knew that that was the language we wanted, the next question was, what kind of framework? Do we want something that's big and opinionated, or do we want something that's light and more bring your own batteries? And maybe Mohammed, you want to talk about how we weighed that?
Yeah, I mean, it was clear that I think no one really wanted to write in something that they had already been doing. Everybody wanted something new. And it was new to us just by chance. We really liked the simplicity of Python and Django together. It was clear based on all of our experiences that we'd been using something more complicated, and kind of pinched ourselves when we were comparing, you know, writing these, you know, the fizz buzz examples side by side, and seeing them in all the different languages, Ruby, Java, PHP, Python, and Go even. And we were just like, it's pretty obvious. This seems like, you know, the right way to go.
Can I ask what the timing was for this? Sorry to
interrupt. This is roughly 5 years ago, 5.5 years ago.
2016.
That we were making these decisions, yeah.
So Django was what, like 1.8, 1.6, 1.8 then?
It was pre 2.0. Yeah.
So already had the migrations and things like that. So I mean, yes. So you're talking about language examples there, but like it's the web examples, right? It's like, so you're very much building these dynamic web pages, like you're needing to fill a template, get data from a database, that kind of thing. Is that?
Yeah, I was coming fresh from .NET MVC. And so I was like, whoa, I think Microsoft borrowed a lot here. And I think I'm at the source now. So I want to learn the source. Because, you know, I was doing migrations in .NET MVC. I was like, this is pretty cool, but where'd it come from? And then I discovered, you know, so.
I have to say that another thing that weighed heavily as we were making these decisions was how excellent the Django documentation was compared to everything else we were looking at. I'm really big on documentation, and I had never seen documentation that was this expansive. And just every time we had a question about, oh, well, how would we solve this problem if this was our new universe? The answer was there in the docs. And that was just...
And easy to find.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I wonder if that... I mean, Carlton, maybe you know if that's in part because of the three founders, Adrian and Jacob were English journalism majors. And Simon was a CS major. But I mean, there is that sort of humanities instinct to have a little, you know, not just read the manual, but like actually have a manual. And I always feel like there's some of that. You know, they came from PHP and wanted to do Python, but also, you know, docs were important from the get-go.
And I think from the word go, there was this emphasis on having topic documentation as well as just references. So, you know, okay, you've got like the method signature and, you know, what it does, but you've also got a more discursive document that explains how you go about something, how the URL routing works, or, you know, how the form layer works, or how the template layer works or whatever. So, yeah, I think this is interesting because it's not often that you get a team that are in a position that have experience of several different languages and are in a position to make a kind of almost greenfield decision as to which tech stack. That's kind of a privilege and a burden, because if you get it wrong, you had all the choices, it's on you, right?
We are deeply lucky in that regard. There are numerous tech teams across the Berkeley campus, and I can't speak as to whether they all have the kind of freedom to kind of pick their own stack the way that we do. But we have had all the years that I've been in the department, and it's one of the things that's great about my job, actually. We don't have technology imposed on us. We kind of get to choose what waters we swim in.
You're 5 years into your Django experiment. Would you say you're happy?
Yeah, and actually, let me just add that it grew from there, because with respect to our CMS sites, we were a Drupal shop, and when we made the Django decision, that was intended to be a decision for give.berkeley.edu and any other custom applications that we might end up building, but we didn't have any inkling at the time that we would move in the same direction with our CMS-based sites, which we do a lot of. Then Drupal 8 came out, and I built a site in Drupal 8. And I don't want to bash Drupal, because that's not what I'm here to talk about, but the developer experience for Drupal 8 seemed to me to be a big backslide. And I actually kind of felt depressed about the idea of rolling out new sites on that stack. And so I took a look at what was happening in the Django CMS world. And of course, there was Django CMS, and I took a good look at that. But Wagtail was coming on fast and strong. This is probably around 2017 now. And so I asked my boss if I could do my next CMS project in Wagtail. And I explained that, you know, it's built on Django and, you know, this tech stack that we've already kind of blessed and chosen. And he said yes. And my first experience building a site with Wagtail was really kind of revelatory, because it's just a very, very, very different approach, in that with Drupal, when you first begin building out your site, like defining your content types and their various fields and whatnot, you don't do that with code. You click around in the Drupal interface for a good long time. You build out your site's structure by pointing and clicking. And then if you so choose, you can export that into code that you can commit to Git and whatnot. But for all of time, your site's configuration can diverge from the actual code that defines that configuration. And so when I sat down with Wagtail for the first time and realized, oh, I define my content types with Django models, and it's all in code, and it all just flows from that, and it all just works, that was just an enormous difference. And so we didn't look back, and all of our CMS projects are in Wagtail now. We've converted more than a half dozen old Drupal projects into Wagtail, and within another year or so, we will sunset our last Drupal project, and so we'll be entirely on Django and Wagtail for all of our stuff.
Oh, wow, so you are happy.
We're very happy.
Yeah.
and it's not just us who are happy as developers. Within the marketing and communications group, we work with in-house designers, in-house writers and editors, and everyone who interacts with the CMS, they are all so much happier using Wagtail. We like to keep our own colleagues happy, and it's much easier to do that nowadays because we've adopted that stack.
Because that's the thing with the CMS, right? Is that like you're building an interface for a content creator or a designer, and they have to use that. They have to live in this interface. Right. So,
right. And I think that the experience that I had at PC World building a CMS from the ground up back in the dark ages, I think that that taught me a lot about how CMSs can create pain points for the people who actually, you know, are trying to push content out the door on a day-to-day basis. And so early on in my freelance career, all that knowledge was really helpful in trying to choose an open source CMS that I could then, you know, give to clients and hope that they would be happy with. And so at the time, Drupal 7 was really the right thing. It was the best of the bunch. But again, by the time 2017 rolled around, and after we had made the decision to kind of become a Django shop, it became obvious that Wagtail was where we wanted to be. It's just a better experience all around for everybody.
Okay.
That timing's pretty good. I mean, coming to Django at a relatively mature point and then Wagtail as well. I mean, we had Tom Dyson on to talk about it. That's a good timing for Wagtail, right? That's sort of a trick, which I guess you only know in hindsight, whether, you know, what point in the wave are you riding?
Yeah. I remember listening to that show with Tom Dyson, and he said he talked about how Torchbox had once been a Drupal shop as well. And he had a quote on the show that just resonated with me very much. He said that they found Drupal to be a hard technology to love, quote unquote. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's kind of the way I've felt about it, too. I've been using it all these years, but I kind of fight with it a lot and whatnot. And then the more I used Wagtail, the more I realized that there's an entire constellation of troubles that I used to have that just don't exist in this new world because the architecture is different and whatnot.
Can we talk, Mohammed, about the giving page that you worked on? Because in part, Carlton just, is it live, Carlton? Updated the Django Zone donations page. So I'm curious, I guess it depends on when you did that, but what tools you used and challenges you faced.
Yeah, we went live with it in October 2020. And it's been, I mean, as far as we're concerned, running without any kind of load issues. And I remember, you know, there were issues during December timeframe with ColdFusion, because that's when most of the GIFs came in. But we also switched hosting. We were hosting on local VMs, and with Django, we decided to go with Google Cloud. So, as well as with Postgres in Google Cloud, and I mean, we have a great DevOps guy, Rob. Hey, Rob! Thanks for everything. He's the one who did the hard, you know, like gap analysis and cost analysis with AWS. And I know that Central Campus, I think they use AWS, but we decided to go with Google Cloud. Another one of those like decisions that we're allowed to just make. And we're very happy with it. It has its ups and downs, but I don't think there's any, I don't think it's really that much of a difference. In terms of that, it has been a huge improvement. As far as doing the giving part, I mean, it really have to be like, I don't know, what did you find the hardest part of developing, which giving site was this for Django?
I think Will's referring to the donations page on the Django project.
Right.
And that's just a Stripe integration. And the hardest bit is always like the integration with the API, because, you write code. Normally you can write tests and all the rest, but when it's these kind of integration tests, you end up, you're going to do mock Stripe's entire service.
Yeah. And your volume, I assume, is a little bit more than Django's. So.
Yeah, well, we have also some bottlenecks. We're still a state institution, and we have to follow the rules sometimes, and that's with Central Accounting. And they have yet to approve anything other than CyberSource. and not just any cyber source, but cyber sources. What's it called? I forget which product. It's like their first product. So we literally have to redirect the person
to this page,
to a cyber source branded credit card page, and then it gets redirected back. And so we had to do a lot of testing there, but it works. And especially with an Ember front end that's hosted by a Django container that's requesting APIs from a separate Django API instance. Yeah, it all seems to work. And the only thing we're kind of unhappy about really is Ember.
Right, okay. Because it's quite heavyweight.
And that's kind of what led us to HTMX.
Okay, so let's just talk about Ember momentarily, because it's quite, I mean, it's a full single page application type framework. It's, I mean, it's powerful, right? But
oh yeah, it's crazy powerful. And I mean, easy to use when you're kind of getting started in terms of building, and because it comes with everything, but it's kind of like the, you know, those model sets that they say intermediate on it. And then you start opening everything up and you're just like, whoa, this is not intermediate, you know? And that's what Ember feels like. But you know, it was, so as a team, we decided on Django, and, you know, I would say, yeah, we're pretty much, most of us, you know, back-end developers. Our decision to use Ember wasn't inappropriate or incorrect. We just found out that a year and a half into this, this is not what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we realized we can save a lot of debt or get rid of it. API debt what I call, I mean, wetness when it comes to your entire presence, which is like, okay, got models, views, controllers in your backend. Oh, wait, get back to work, guys. We got to do it in the front end too.
It's a lot cheaper.
And to me, that's wetness. I'm sorry. What else are you going to call it? So it's, and we're seeing a lot of, you know, just how it's also Ember 3.1, 3.10, and it's not Octane. And had we started with Octane, I don't necessarily think we would be here, maybe. But, you know, that's, we are here now, and HTMX is here now. And so it's given us the chance to say, well, maybe the solution wasn't to upgrade to Octane, but the solution was to rethink everything and tear down some stuff so that we can build some stuff that really cuts out a lot of the wetness, dries it off a bit.
I mean, my sort of overriding impression with HTMX is it enables you to build something that's just an order of magnitude simpler than SPA solution.
I mean, exactly. One of our, one feature of our giving page is searching for funds. Like, I believe we have 1,600 publicly available funds that you can give to. So anything from the Botanical Garden, Art Museum, football, you know, brain science, you know, keep going, keep going. And so in order to search for, you know, what you're looking for, it's kind of hard with Ember using an API and trying to do like some meaningful search against Postgres in full text, although we're really excited about the new features. I believe, well, we just recently upgraded to, what did we upgrade to, Matthew, 3.2? Yeah. And so it's my job to start testing out the new web search feature against Postgres. So I'm looking forward to that. By the way, side note here, I just got back from Egypt, and I was in Egypt for the last 2 weeks. So I'm a little spacey on the work stuff right now, but don't worry, it's all good.
That's fine. No, you're doing fine. It's good. It's you know, good description of what's going on. So HTMX lets you build this kind of search API, what you just used with a filter or something like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, with HTMX, I can do it. And like Matthew was the one who showed me how he was doing it on the CMS side with intercooler.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I think that's more appropriate. And so I started. So I'm basically prototyping the giving page in Django with HTMX, you know, kind of on the side in hopes to eventually present this to the team to a point where we can finish it off together. And so one of those proof of concepts is, okay, this is the Ember way we were searching. This is the HTMX way. And it's simpler, a lot less code. And you're, I mean, it really, the user, it's transparent. I mean, they're not going to notice a thing.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, how did you discover HTMX? But Matthew, you were using intercooler.
Yeah. So I think it was in 2018 that I had to build a couple of sites in Wagtail that are now live on the web at innovators.berkeley.edu and founderspledge.berkeley.edu. And both of these sites had some very minimal Ajax-y, you know, slicing and dicing of content where like a user would check some boxes and get a different listing of items, you know, that sort of thing. And back in my Drupal days, that sort of thing was very easy because there's a feature in Drupal called views, very different from Django views. But what those do, it provides you a way to send content out to the front end and have a user click on a form and have the content change. And it does all the Ajax for you. So in the Django and Wagtail world, I didn't have an immediate analog for that when I had to build those two sites. And so I went looking around for something easy because I didn't want to have to learn React or Vue or something like that in order to just do this little bit of Ajax-y stuff. Now, I wasn't building a web application. This was a brochureware type of site, you know, as I like to call it. But it did need that bit of dynamic interaction. So I found Intercooler, and I did both projects with Intercooler, and I absolutely loved it, with the only caveat that I didn't too much care for the dependency on jQuery. And so I kind of kept my eye on Intercooler, figuring that at some point there would be a new version that would drop the jQuery dependency. And then summer 2020, Carson Gross comes out with what I had been waiting for, and the only surprise was it had a new name. and so started watching, you know, the excitement grow around HTMX. And then about a year ago, one of our colleagues needed to build a new homecoming site for Berkeley, and it needed some of that, you know, dynamic Ajax-y type stuff going on. And so I showed our colleague, James Ferris, what I had done with Intercooler. And I told him, HTMX is the new Intercooler. Why don't you give this a shot? And that worked for him. And so the homecoming site went live with HTMX. And then last summer, one of our editors told me that we needed a way to show all of Berkeley's various Nobel winners on our main campaign fundraising site. We're in the middle of a $6 billion fundraising campaign at the moment. And our online efforts for that are at light.berkeley.edu. So there's a page on that site that you can get to by going to nobels.berkeley.edu. You'll get redirected. And it's just an interactive listing of all the faculty and alumni who have won Nobels over the years, 80-something people, I think. And you can switch up the listing by choosing, you know, do you want physics, chemistry, what decade did they win, were they alumni or faculty? Did it with HTMX, and it couldn't have been easier. I mean, it literally couldn't have been easier.
Fantastic. And it's just a Django view behind the scenes.
That's all it is. Yeah.
I caught wind of this, and I was like, we have a weekly kind of developer roundtable, and I was like, Matthew, you got to demo this. And so he did a code walkthrough, and I was just, because, you know, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, wait a minute, that's not JSON? That's just snippets of HTML? Isn't that what was weird is like, it's one of those feelings where it's like, this is seems what I feel like I should be seeing this at least 10 years ago. You know, why didn't this happen 10 years ago? And so, yeah. And I was like, wow, okay, late to the party, but great. Let's get started.
But it kind of did happen 10 years. There were, you know, there was PJAX and, you know, the Turbo Gears.
Well,
and
yeah, that's what Carson said. I mean, he saw the capabilities for this, you know, at least that long ago. But
it was all there. And then, like, you know, I don't know, it went jQuery and then Backbone. And then, you know, off from Backbone, like Ember came along, you know, and these kind of...
Yeah, his virtual DOM.
Yeah, and it went all that way through the richer and bigger frameworks. And this kind of idea of, oh, I'll just send a little snippet and swap it. I mean, jQuery load, right? jQuery.load, where you would get an HTML snippet and it would put the HTML snippet in the DOM at the selector. That was this a long time ago. And, you know.
Yeah.
So it kind of did, but for some reason the fashion went, I don't know, the other way.
Well, and we should mention Carson is an alum of Berkeley as well, I believe.
Is that true? All right.
I think so. Yeah. I believe he also went to Stanford after, but...
one of those.
Yeah. Well, do you use? We just interviewed Adam Johnson earlier, and he has the Django HTMX package as well as some other ones. Do you use any related packages with your Django HTMX usage?
You know, I think I built that Nobel's feature before he released that package.
It's recent. This year, I think.
Yeah. But I would absolutely use it going forward. And there had been a Django intercooler package that I had used on those first two intercooler projects that I did. Basically just to give you, the ability to do like if request.intercooler, you know, in your views, make it very easy. And so, you know, the new Django HTMX gives you if request.htmx. Yeah, I think that another thing I'd like to point out with respect to all this, the explosion of the HTML over the wire stuff that's happening in the Django universe, another way of cracking that nut that I've been playing around with on my personal website is unpoly.js. And that's also a really, really nice package. And it takes a slightly different approach in that with HTMX, HTMX kind of assumes that you're going to be pushing little HTML fragments, always fragments, which is why in your Django views, you need to do things like if request.htmx, because you need to know whether you're supposed to be sending a fragment or the full page. Whereas with unpoly, the assumption is that you're getting a full page every time. And so on first page load, you get the full page. And then unpoly captures, you know, like any click on a link, and it goes and gets the full page, but then only swaps out the stuff that has changed. And so you don't end up with logic in your view that is, you know, determining whether you're sending just a snippet or the full thing. You're kind of always sending the full thing. And that may not be great from the respect of how much you're pushing down the wire, but if you're taking a site that is just nothing but, you know, full page loads, and you just want to make it a little Ajax-y, it's super simple. You just basically layer unpoly on top of it, and you let unpoly take care of the rest. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it's very similar in that respect to, I think, the way TurboLinks works, which is what's embedded into Rails, is because it turns out that if you keep the head static, you can swap out the body very quickly without the rendering errors.
Can I ask, we have in the notes, there's some other areas at Berkeley where Django is being used. And actually, I was interested to see, so the Extension School, the D-Lab, or any of these you want to give shout outs to?
I mean, yeah, anyone who's obviously taken a class or a Python class at UC Extension has definitely been told, go check out Django or even take the class. And the student run, I mean, what I found was so interesting when I came to Berkeley was like, the students run the computing facility. Okay. That happens a lot at Berkeley, by the way. It does not happen at University of Texas, or at least it didn't 20 years ago when I left. So, and I think it's amazing, and they do a great job. And yeah, they host Django. And so there are definitely student groups out there who are hosting Django sites at the OCF. And DLab is a great resource because it offers Python classes for humanities students. You know, I mean, everything's about data science now and everyone's doing it. And there's a big effort internally to really kind of bridge the gap between, you know, the humanities student and the engineering student and the natural sciences student and data science. And so DLab is a great place for that. And of course, you know, when it comes to publishing your work, well, they tell you, now that you know Python, head on over to Django. So those are the ones that like are open, you know, and they're actively promoting Django. And so I want to see more of it, you know, at Berkeley. And I know there is more. I just, you know, if you're using Django at Berkeley, say it, tweet it, you know.
Well, that's a lot. I mean, I know UT is using Django because they're switching from COBOL to Django. And for many years, they would train people. We interviewed people, a 6-month program, especially women, with that transition. So they're at an in-between place with that. But
okay.
Actually, over the holidays, I met someone who goes to Haas, the business school at Berkeley. And I asked her, how's that going? Because I went to business school. And she said, oh, yeah, I'm learning a lot of data science. And I was like, the business school teaches you that? And she's like, no, she's taking as many as she can through the School of Information. So I know this is not unusual for Berkeley, but this is so, yeah, not the norm. You know, my business school... and where another place I taught in the East Coast, I'm just like, why aren't we doing this? And just nobody thinks of it. But I guess Berkeley has that history and, you know, tech is in the water. So it's like, why aren't we doing it? Whereas telling someone in rural New England, hey, you should teach Python. They're like, what's Python?
I know.
So.
No. And you know, of course, we were always checking out the language stats and, you know, after our adoption of Python and Django, and then to see like Python overtake JavaScript. Now I know that's probably debatable, but still, it was a great feeling. And we feel like we finally in our careers chose correctly, and it's great. Yeah.
Are there any features or things you'd like improved now that we're talking about, you know, Wagtail, Django, HTMX, right? I mean, because there's always things that can be improved. Just specific to your usage at Berkeley?
The single biggest improvement that my internal users needed in Wagtail came in the latest release, which was a way to do bulk operations within the CMS, like delete a bunch of pages or recategorize a bunch of pages or whatever. That had been a lack for a very long time. And they finally filled it in and did it in a way that's just gorgeous. So that was literally the big flashing item on my boy, we need this list. And now it's checked off.
Well, it does seem just in the ecosystem of Django, you know, with Django and then REST framework and Wagtail, that covers so much of what Django needs. Because sometimes people say, if they come to Django, they say, oh, I thought APIs was built in, or I thought a CMS was built in, because that is in some other frameworks. But, you know, thanks to those two projects... still going on. It's still going pretty strong. It's there for you if you need it.
Indeed.
Yeah. And I have other Django apps that I work on. One of them is our integration with Salesforce. And so, you know, imagine managing Salesforce data across departments in the entire campus and everybody's individual needs. So you really just have to tell everyone, yeah, you're your own island and it's a bunch of concentric circles and that's it. But you know, one of the apps that I maintain allows you to upload your own data, and then it gets merged with the central data, and it uses Django's Celery and Redis, and it's an older version of Django, and so I'm really excited about the new features in Django to see what I get to enjoy and get rid of, hopefully. So yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Well, Carlton, that was came a little bit out of the survey, but you obviously worked a lot on the built-in Redis integration in 4.0.
Yeah, that was directly out of the survey. So, you know, we asked...
Survey just came out for this year, by the way.
Yes.
Blogged that yesterday.
Yeah.
What cache backends do you use? And everyone was using Redis. And it's like, well, we've got 3 Memcache backends and no Redis backend. So, Google Summer of Code project to bring that into core. And, you know, the Django Redis package will continue to exist and be able to go further and beyond, you know, just the sort of core cache backend API, but you know, to have that option in Django itself rather than, you know, it was always like, oh, I need to use Redis, what package do I use? And you spend a day searching it, and then 2 years later you're like, which one did I choose last
time?
I can't remember. Yeah, right, okay, exactly. So at least there's a first choice now for, you know, if you want to use Redis, okay, start here, and then when you grow out of that, then you know
yeah,
you can go searching for the more advanced options.
And hats off to Pandas for that as well, man. I can't believe how amazing that tool is. So when I'm, you know, merging all this data, I'm not doing it myself. No way. I'm handing it off to Pandas, and they're doing an amazing. I think it's magic sometimes.
Can I maybe just ask as a final question? So at Berkeley, the data science web thing, it feels like within the Python world, data science is trumping the web. The web is like a nice add-on. Does that feel correct to you, or do you see room for the web to grow? Like, what's the view from ground zero of technology?
Yeah, it's definitely an afterthought after they've done their model and, you know, written up their report and presented their paper. And it's not always Python, it's R or something else. And it's really just a matter of, I think the fact that I think it's the humanities students that are really going to, we're really going to see a lot of change from they're learning Python, like there's just more of myself and Matthew, you know, where we didn't come from programming. And so we're not doing, you know, Heroku apps in high school. And so, you know, I think they're going to look for, oh, well, look, I've already gotten, you know, 50% of the way here with my current work. Let me just, you know, do the rest in Django, and so I think it really has a lot to do with Python's popularity. So I think the more that happens, the chances are really good with Django and the simplicity of Django. Because, I mean, you know, I have a friend who's starting a company, and he told me he was doing it in Flask. And I was like, why? And that was my first question. Why? and he was telling me all these things. I was like, but Django does that. But Django does that. And that was my response each time. And I'm not just saying that, you know, it wasn't appropriate for him to choose Flask or anything like that. But I think afterwards he was like, oh, well, maybe I need to rethink this. And I think it's that, you know, what does get up and running really mean? You know, and so sometimes get up and running can be get up and running like we did with Ember. And now we're rethinking it with HTMX. And that could be your backend stack as well. Or it could mean do the necessary prep work and find that with just a little bit of effort and you're up and running and you're staying there. And that's really what Django does for you. It allows you to stay there and feel good about it. I don't have those moments where I'm like, oh, what is this other side of the web developer world doing these days? I just don't. Now, of course, yeah, I've had 20 years of doing this so far, but I think 20 years says a lot. It says, yeah, I've been there, done that. So, and I like Django. And so I think, yeah.
Well, I think we all agree.
Cool.
Yep.
I think we're pretty much out of time now. Is there any last things, any shout outs or things you want to call mention to? I know you've mentioned a number of things at Berkeley, but anything else while people are listening?
I mean, thanks for having us. I mean, I was just trying to thank my team on Twitter for I was literally after that moment and where like I pretty much, you know, knew what Matthew was doing and I was just, and so, you know, I got a tweet about it. It was just one of those things. And then when you guys caught wind of it, I was like, seriously? And even Matthew was surprised. And so I was like, you know, yeah, let's get on it and let's talk about it. Yeah.
It's awesome to have you on. When we started off, we had two kind of types of episode in mind. One with, you know, talking about contributors to Django, but also Django in the wild.
Yeah.
You know, like how are people really using it? And so for you to come on and tell us all about how it's just like, yeah, awesome. So good. And you know, Mohammed, what you were just saying about, you know, everything, you know, everything Django and how happy you are with it. And Matthew, what you were saying earlier about, you know, switching over to Wagtail and, you know, how that punt you took on the framework has really paid off. It's just like, yeah, this is why we do it. And, you know,
yeah,
it's what Django's all about.
I mean, I hope there are other developers who are in our shoes listening and, you know, feel good about your decision if you're listening to this podcast.
Indeed. Indeed.
Okay, so go and crack open the Kool-Aid now.
Yeah.
I know. Oh, man.
Thank you both so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks again, guys. This is
really
great.
Appreciate it, and it's really interesting to hear how it's being used at Berkeley. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We are available at djangochat.com, chatdjango on Twitter, and we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Join us next time. Bye-bye.